Today's topic is the compass of wise intention. And so I'll just say a few things before we settle into meditation about this topic. And so wise intention is the second factor in the Eightfold Noble Path. I saw as I was seeing your names and where you were from, there are some people who are newer to Buddhist meditation. So there's an Eightfold Path, Noble Path that the Buddha invited us to walk along in order to achieve awakening in this life. And so these different factors on the path are named, and we'll be looking at wise intention, the second one. And it's sometimes called wise resolve or wise thought as well. And so as you might have read in the description of today, we can see the implication of maybe being curious about intention and wise intention in particular, because we can see the results of divisiveness, widely in society in the world right now. A lot of ill will, hatred, a lot of violence, a lot of greed for possessions and sense desires in excess. So we can see kind of the results of maybe unwise intention that are, prevalent in the world. And we could probably, if we're honest with ourselves, really see it in our own hearts and minds as well. And so the invitation for today is to bring everything, bring all of you into this practice. It is welcome and important, actually, to include it all. And so I'd also like to just, saying that, pause to really just acknowledge all of the violence, the hatred, the unnecessary pain and suffering that's happening in the world right now, today. Near, far, whether it's personal, collective, human-made or a non-human-made or impacted, right? It's touching all of us in various ways. And so let's just pause and really acknowledge that that's here with us now. What does it feel like in the body and the heart to really acknowledge that in this moment? Allowing ourselves to be with it for just some time, touch into it as we're often distracting and pulling away because it is a lot. Grounding in the body and the sounds around you in ways that feel supportive. And also, I, didn't realize this, when I was offered this particular day, but today happens to be International Day of Peace, World Peace Day, according to the UN, the United Nations. And so, given this topic and given what we'll explore, I'd like to dedicate this time that we're together to all who have spoken up for life, for nonviolence, to the protection of the oppressed, the marginalized, the forgotten, and the more than human world. This day of peace. We can remember maybe specific people, ancestors. One Buddhist ancestor that's, deep in my heart is Thich Nhat Hanh, right? Made in exile for just asking for the violence to stop. And there are many ancestors in our personal lives, maybe in our families, in our societies, cultures, people living today whom we might know or might not know. People speaking, acting, making their commitments known to nonviolence. To peace. And really supporting the changes for a world that supports life for all. So with that dedication, with that contemplation, and with our topic today, I'd like us to invite us into cultivating a heart free from ill will. So I'll guide a meditation that's based on loving kindness or metta meditation, metta being the Pali word that's often translated to loving kindness or kindness. To really cultivate this heart that's free from ill will on this International Peace Day. And so I'll invite you to find a comfortable posture, whether it's sitting or lying down, really allowing the body to be at ease in whatever way it can. Feeling free to move the body, adjust the body throughout the meditation as is needed to really support ease, relaxation, supporting the heart, softening. Feeling the support of the body, however it's positioned. Inviting it to release the tension into that support wherever it's making contact. Noticing those points of contact as well as the space within and around the body. Allowing the body to expand and move into that space through the releasing of any unnecessary tension and even the act of breathing, with each in and out breath, allowing the body to expand and rest into space and support. Allowing the sounds and the space that you're in to be noticed as they move and change. Not needing to exclude. Contact with the body and the space around. Resting. Inviting ease. Of the heart, of the mind, of the body together. And so, as we settle into this loving kindness meditation, I'll invite you to think of or bring to mind one being. It could be a human, it could be a pet, it could be any being that you feel fondness toward that offers you love freely. It offers you love easily. You feel loved by. It's uncomplicated, bringing this being to mind. Noticing how the body, how the mind responds to this being coming forward, maybe multiple. Beings are coming forward, and that's okay too. You can choose one or have more than one if that's supportive right now. I'm so unimagining this being. You're together, and they'll be offering. I'll be offering phrases, and imagine this being offering you these phrases. So you'll be receiving these phrases from this being that you've just brought forward, allowing yourself to bathe in this love, this kindness, these well wishes. May you be safe from inner and outer harm. May you be safe from inner or outer harm. May you be as healthy as you can be. May you be as healthy as you can be. Just receiving these phrases from this loved being, loving being. May you be happy. May you be happy. May you be at ease. May you be at ease. May you be filled with love and kindness. May you be filled with love and kindness. Noticing how you're receiving these phrases from this loving being. And they'll offer you these phrases again. May you be safe from inner and outer harm. May you be safe from inner and outer harm. May you be as healthy as you can be. May you be as healthy as you can be. May you be happy. May you be happy. May you be at ease. May you be at ease. May you be filled with love and kindness. May you be filled with love and kindness. Now, with this being that's just offered you these wishes of well-being, we'll switch roles. And so now you will offer these phrases to them. So now you'll be saying to them in your mind and your heart, may you be safe from inner and outer harm. May you be safe from inner and outer harm. May you be as healthy as you can be. May you be as healthy as you can be. May you be happy. May you be happy. May you be at ease. May you be at ease. May you be filled with love and kindness. May you be filled with love and kindness. Now I'll invite you to offer these phrases to yourself, from yourself to yourself. That feels a bit too challenging in this moment. You can offer these phrases again to the same being you just offered. Feel into what feels supportive for you right now. May I be safe from inner and outer harm. May I be safe from inner and outer harm. May I be as healthy as I can be. May I be as healthy as I can be. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be at ease. May I be at ease. May I be filled with love and kindness. May I be filled with love and kindness. So now I'll invite you to bring to mind a group of loved ones, friends, family, pets, tree beings, birds, whatever comes to mind as loving beings in your life. Imagine yourself being surrounded by this group, however small or large. And all of them will be offering you these well wishes. You'll be receiving these well wishes. Allow them to settle into the heart, the body, the mind. All of them together say, may you be safe from inner and outer harm. May you be safe from inner and outer harm. Together they say, may you be as healthy as you can be. May you be as healthy as you can be. Together they say, may you be happy. May you be happy. May you be at ease. May you be at ease. Together they say to you, may you be filled with love and kindness. May you be filled with love and kindness. Now you will be sending these well wishes to this group of loved ones. May all of you be safe from inner and outer harm. May you be safe from inner and outer harm. May you be as healthy as you can be. May you be as healthy as you can be. May all of you be happy. May you all be happy. May you be at ease. May you be at ease. May you be filled with love and kindness. May you be filled with love and kindness. So now we'll take the transition to both send and receive these well wishes to everyone on this call, everyone here sitting together, both sending these well wishes and inviting yourself to receive them, knowing that everyone else is sending them your way. So may you be safe from inner and outer harm. May you be safe from inner and outer harm. May you be as healthy as you can be. May you be as healthy as you can be. May you be happy. May you be happy. May you be at ease. May you be at ease. May you be filled with love and kindness. May you be filled with love and kindness. And now we'll send these well wishes to all beings on this globe, in this world, near and far. May all be safe from inner and outer harm. May all be safe from inner and outer harm. May all be as healthy as they can be. May all be as healthy as they can be. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be at ease. May all beings be at ease. May all beings be filled with love and kindness. May all beings be filled with love and kindness. And just for these last moments of this meditation, coming back to the heart, to the body, to the felt sense, if the mind has strayed, inviting it back. Noticing sound and sensation. Noticing the quality of the heart, of the mind, as you breathe and rest. Thank you all for your practice. This exploration of cultivating a heart free from ill will. Really, inviting you to take a moment to move the body, Stretch if needed. Having some tea or water. Or any other beverage. Caring for the body. And really just gently transitioning. Perhaps even remaining in a meditative posture. So I'll offer some reflections on wise intention. And I don't know if it came through, but at a certain point, there were very lively protesters, activists marching and banging pots and drums. And I couldn't quite hear what they were saying, but I have an idea of what I know they were expressing. And there's a lot that many of us feel that's high in the heart that wants to be spoken and expressed. And some of you have been doing that. Maybe some of you aren't inclined necessarily to be out on the streets in that way, but are curious about this topic. Wise intention. What could it mean for you? And I'll just offer some reflections, and then, as Caroline mentioned, we could be in conversation. We'll open it up for questions, reflections, continued inquiry together. And so, as I was stating before, wise intention is the second factor on the Eightfold Path. And, sometimes it's called wise resolve, wise thought. And so, it can be helpful just to know that to, maybe intention doesn't always fit, but maybe resolve actually lands or resonates better for you, or thought lands better for you. And these are translations from Pali texts, how the Buddha's teachings were preserved, at least in one way. They were preserved, orally and also in other languages. And so this factor of all be using wise intention includes three kind of main aspects. And that is metta, which is what we were practicing. The metta, again, is a Pali word that's often translated as goodwill or loving kindness or friendliness or freedom from ill will. Simply the act of freedom from ill will, that is metta. And metta is one of these kind of boundless heart qualities that the Buddha spoke about. And metta in particular has this flavor of care for all without distinction. So that's one factor of wise intention, this lack of ill will, this goodwill, friendliness. The second is this principle of non-harm or harmlessness. And the third is around renunciation or putting down aspects of sense desire that lead to craving, right? And we can see this in the world as leading to greed, leading to kind of possessiveness and possessions. And so the Buddha said, if these three qualities are in the mind, the actions that come forward will be wholesome and suitable and supportive for our path and contributing in the world beneficially. And so a little bit of context, I've mentioned the Eightfold Path a few times, so it's the second factor. And the first factor is wise view, which is this understanding around this principal teaching of dukkha, another Pali word, which is often translated as suffering or unsatisfactoriness or vulnerability or dis-ease. There are many flavors of what this word can mean, and it has a full range, but it's this understanding of this part of life, right? And the causes of it. And wise view also includes this teaching on karma. And a lot of you have heard the word karma, a Sanskrit word, that and it's translated as action in the Buddhist teaching. So karma is action, and it's this understanding around cause and effect, which is really important for us just to know that that's a part of the view as we talk about intention and subsequent action, right? So this understanding around how there's pain, there's unsatisfactoriness, there's vulnerability in the world. And there's cause and effect. There's an understanding around cause and effect, so that we can apply it in beneficial ways, right? This is all in wise view. Then there's wise intention, right? These pieces, these factors, these qualities we can bring forward of metta, non-harming, of renouncing or putting down sense desire that leads to greed and craving. And then after wise intention are three factors that are, you know, maybe important for this conversation. They're wise speech, wise action, and wise livelihood, right? So I just wanted to contextualize this wise intention as it is on this Eightfold Path. And then the others are quite oriented toward meditative practice, which I won't talk too much about today. And so what I'm speaking to, wise intention, while it can certainly reside in our meditative practice, it's one of these pieces and factors that we can bring mindfulness to in our day-to-day life when we're not on the cushion, when we're not meditating. So let's continue. And then, yeah, I'm really looking forward to your reflections and our conversation. Right. So continuing in the contextualization before I guess I move a little bit further, wise view, you can think about it's giving us a framing or lens or orientation about how we see or understand the world that we're in. And to kind of narrow it down even more, the Buddha specifically is prioritizing in his teachings this aspect of dukkha, which is the elements of unnecessary pain in the world and suffering that we experience in our heart and mind and are reproduced in the world, right? So view is explicitly around these particular aspects, the unnecessary pain and suffering and its causes, right? And so, you know, and it includes how to alleviate, you know, these elements from our lives. And it, you know, and that actually points to the rest of the Eightfold Path. And so wise intention is supporting the cultivation of the mind that we can, you know, in its highest form, cultivate the conditions in the mind so that we can create the conditions in the world that bring beneficial outcomes. Okay, so I'm trying to make, you know, kind of narrow it down, create this map that we're working within. And so, so the heart mind that we cultivate with this value of metta, loving kindness, non-hatred, harmlessness, non-harm, right? When we cultivate these values, and then we aim to renounce what feeds the sensual desire, what leads to greed and possessiveness in the world. Once we establish this, then we can speak and act and work in the world in ways that are in alignment with the path of eradication of greed, hatred, and confusion in our own hearts, so that they don't replicate themselves again out in the world, right? Because we are constructing the worlds that we live in, right? And so one illustration of this comes from the Buddhist teachings translated from the Pali by Andrew Olensky. And it's from a sutta called Arming Oneself. And so the Buddha's talking really to us about, oh, he saw that when we arm ourselves, a lot of fear comes to the mind, to the heart. And so I'll just read a few lines from this that will, I think, point to what I've been trying to elucidate. So in the middle now, he says, seeing people locked in conflict, I became completely distraught. But then I discerned here a thorn, hard to see, lodged deep in the heart. It's only when pierced by this thorn that one runs in all directions. And so if that thorn is taken out, one does not run and settles down, right? And so we can be curious, what is this thorn? And the Buddha too was seeing people lodged and locked in conflict and he was distraught, right? So it's like, oh wait, there's something here. The world, unfortunately maybe, is pretty similar, you know, to what the Buddha was pointing to. And we see it often here today, right? So this reflection is happening from 2,600 years ago to now. Oh, we see conflict. We can be distraught, but actually, there's something here in the heart, our hearts, that's also echoing, too. That's important for us to pull out this thorn, so that we can settle down and we can move in the world in a way that benefits all. And so, however immediate, or in our personal lives or in society at large, we're all facing oppression, injustice, violence, hunger, fear, and so much more. This is all just right in front of us. And it's my view, right? And we can have conversation, but it's my view that we should all feel encouraged to act in some way, however small or large, out of compassion to alleviate some measure of this unnecessary difficulty and pain and suffering that's in front of us. Within the Buddhist teachings, compassion is a liberative quality. Right? It's not only about seeing pain and wishing for its end. It's knowing that its end is possible and acting to support its end, right? So there can be a type of joy or delight in the heart when acting compassionately because we know that this pain can come to an end and we're contributing to that manifestation, right? To those conditions at the very least. And so goodwill, metta, and non-harm, right? These are aspects of wise intention. Compassion is one flavor of metta when it comes to suffering. So this goodwill is seen in compassion. And there, in acting in the world, there's also this willingness to be uncomfortable in the process. And this willingness to be uncomfortable is a type of renunciation from comfort, right? Which is a type of sense desire, right? And this is another aspect, right, of wise intention. And we do this as best as we're able, right, without judging ourselves harshly, without, greed, hatred, and confusion in our mind, as best as we can so that we don't replicate again these causes of suffering that we see and feel and know are in the world. And so cultivating this wise intention as a compass to our activities can offer a sense of confidence and courage to act from wisdom, ethical clarity and integrity, and not from impulsive reactivity, which too often lacks wise intention or skillful action. Or sometimes there's anger that's laced with hatred or ill will. So wise intention can really be a support to moving with wisdom. And again, it'll be imperfect. So, and that's okay. We're human. So we can have humility, right? Taking responsibility for what might, transpire, and also self-compassion. Again, not judging ourselves too harshly, because this is a practice. And it takes practice, a lot of repetition and regular recommitment. Doing it again and again and again. And I think there's also this kind of key component of if we're moving in the world with this wise intention that to recognize that we can't do it all and that's okay. It's actually not about us doing it all. It's not about us individually, but it's about offering what we can when we can. And I've spoken about two of these Brahmaviharas, these boundless heart qualities. I've spoken about metta, loving kindness and compassion. And the other two I'll just mention because they can really offer balance as we might engage in the world, right? And these other two are equanimity, which there'll be a week of teachings on this week. So I would definitely encourage that you, listen to those teachings and see how they can support you in finding balance and wisdom and clarity about what's in front of you. And also this fourth of the Brahmaviharas, resonant joy, right? And it's really allowing the mind to be with, allowing to resonate with the joy and the beauty that is around us, letting the heart actually be filled out and nourished by joy that's happening as well. This can offer a type of balance, especially when we're engaging in challenges and difficulties in the world, the best that we are able. There's joy here too. Don't miss it. Allow the heart to resonate with it. This is what we are aiming to have more of in the world. So let's live what's here in the joy that's here now. And so wise intention also invites us to move in the direction of non-clinging. Often, the people use this kind of phrase of letting go, which might feel tricky to some in some way, but just having an open hand of non-clinging, non-grasping, and not needing to know an outcome, the specific outcomes of our intentions, our well wishes in the world. And the actions that we have offered to the world, not needing to know the specific outcomes, can help free us from significant amounts of pain, headaches, and heartaches and stress. There are so many unseen benefits and outcomes from our beneficial actions. We just spent, 30 minutes cultivating a heart of ill will, right? It's hard to know or even name the number of benefits that will come from that practice. And we can trust that there is something that's going to flow out from that practice, whether it's the softening and opening of one's own heart, whether it's how we relate to another being later today, or a memory that comes back of this practice later this week. Right. We can know in our lives from the many ways we've benefited from others without knowing them, without them knowing that they've benefited us. A simple byproduct, right, of another action that's not specifically aiming to be for us, but we've benefited, right? Cause and effect is not as linear as we would like it to be or like to think it is, perhaps. And there are so many factors of how conditions come together in a particular moment. And it's so clear that there are so many causes and there's so many outcomes from any one or many, right, offerings in the world. And so while we have intentions and we move in the world, we can't always know what the outcome is or that it's not happening or coming to pass. And so to allow ourselves just to know that the intention is what we can choose to move through will allow us to commit again and again to this heart. Of well-being, of non-harm, of renouncing greed. And in this, there's like an element of trust or faith that's often felt kind of in the depths of this non-clinging, of this kind of patience in the process. And I'll just say a few more words before opening up to questions. Yeah, I think, I just said something about being patient, and when I think about wise intention and the actions that might flow forward, I can recognize in myself that sometimes everything feels like an emergency, right? But the wisdom of my own heart and mind knows that all of it can't be resolved right now. And so it's best to take time to do whatever needs to be done well. Right. So just wanting to offer that reflection in whatever ways it might be supportive, because there can be a lot that we might see we want to be done and changed right now. And it can't all change right now. So what can we do well with clear and wise intention? Yeah, and maybe I'll just end with. Yeah, when I was coming up with this title, Compass of Wise Intention, I was thinking of navigating a boat, right? And how you, re I mean, I actually don't, drive a boat, but I have this sense and I know from kind of seeing and I can imagine feeling into, you reorient again and again and again in the direction that you're going. And you're never actually going in a straight line, but you will get to the destination. You come back, tune in, check in. We orient again and again as a practice gently. Again, knowing it won't be a straight line. And so really allowing this inquiry around wise intention, loving kindness, of non-harm, of renouncing greed, and hopefully the outflows of moving with that wise intention will get to whatever destination there might be. And if it's not now, hopefully, in the generations to come. And so thank you for your kind attention. Just pause and let the words settle. And so as Caroline was letting us know at the beginning, and she's put in the chat these links for donation for Sangha Live, for my own support, and really allowing yourself to reflect on this possibility of a whole platform, Sangha Live, functioning on donations, functioning on this principle of reciprocity, knowing that the teachings that are offered here are priceless. And in so whatever way that you feel nourished and the heart feels open, whatever way that you can support both this flat platform and myself as a teacher today, it's so gratefully received, because there is, again, this trust, this kind of movement of faith that we can be supported, not knowing from where that support will come from. These teachings have so supported myself, just in development and in life and in this world. And I, offer these teachings, these reflections freely, so that they might support you as well. And in whatever way that you feel moved and capable of offering a monetary support for this platform, and my own teachings, it's really gratefully received. So thank you for that consideration, and feel really invited to check in with the heart and to allow it to be a part of your practice, to see what feels appropriate and good, onward leading. And so, with that, inviting anyone who has a question, reflection on this particular topic to raise a digital hand, which you can do using the reaction button at the likely at the bottom of your screen, depending on what type of device you're on. You can raise your digital hand, or you can put a question in the chat, prefacing the question with the word question, so that we can be sure to know to respond to it. And so while today's topic was wise intention, I did offer a guided meditation on metta. And so if you do have questions around that as a practice, or as it's woven in, feel free to ask that as well, or even a reflection on that meditation. Great. Yeah, Kira.
Hi.
Hi.
I would wonder in this topic, how could I offer this to people who I might have aversive feelings to, where I might struggle to offer them kindness and love at this moment in my life, maybe persons who have hurt me? Yes.
Yeah, that's a really great question, and an important question. So in this practice of metta, of loving kindness, we, and you might have seen it in the structure that I offered, we really start with easy beings and people. So that we can really cultivate this heart and get a sense of what it is to have this open heart of well wishes. And so we cultivate it to the easiest beings first and send it off. And we cultivate it for ourselves. Sometimes ourselves are a tricky being, a difficult being. There's a more complicated relationship internally. But once we've really kind of gathered a momentum and have a sense of what metta is in our own system, and the heart can soften and open both to offer and receive, then we might engage sometimes with neutral beings. But then, so when I was inviting us to share with all of us here on this call, most of us don't know one another. So it's like, oh, but we probably have some bias toward one another because we're practicing together. And it's like, oh, but what if, right? What if there are these beings who we do have a trickier relationship with, and the heart doesn't necessarily want to open? And so what we can do is really just one, start a particular practice by cultivating kind of an open heart with those whom are easier. And once the heart is feeling more open, you can turn toward just one person at a time that's maybe more challenging and think just of the aspects of that person that you feel are wholesome, that are skillful, that are almost like lovable within kind of your relationship. So there's an element of them that you likely know. It's like sometimes it's some people imagining them as a child. It's like, oh, so much easier to be in contact with them as a child. But if you want to keep them at the age that they are, it's like, oh, there was this time that we did have a beautiful moment together, that you were supportive. It's like, oh, that heart, your heart and their heart, that you were resonating in that moment. And you can actually open the caring for that being in that place in that way. And then slowly with that same person, you might be like, oh, and then there was this rupture. That was really hard. But I still wish well for you. I know that this happened, and there's still a heart that's willing to wish for your health, your well-being, your wholesome happiness. And so there can be an acknowledgement of the pain, the rupture in a particular relationship, but knowing that you still, just as a like human to human, you're like, I still do actually wish for your well-being. And so there can be like this aspect where over time you can cultivate almost a separation from the rupture or harm, which might need actual attention, which might actually redirect you for self-compassion, because maybe there really still is alive kind of pain around that. And maybe you need to take time, caring for yourself in that way. There can be sometimes like detours of questions around, should I forgive them? Maybe if they're still in your life, do I want to have a conversation with them? There are many ways in which you might engage, kind of off the cushion, so to speak. But in the practice, it's a finding a way to recognize kind of, oh, like, is there a place in my heart right now that really wants to send them well wishes? And that might take time. The answer might be no for some period, and that's okay too. It's a practice, and we're cultivating, and we're seeing the edges and boundaries. And then, like the recommendation would be, after working with a difficult person, to find, some balance in either offering a metta again to an easy being, or even expanding to all beings, which are a bit more easy to include when we're not thinking about the specific people that are more challenging for us, just so that you can kind of open the heart and you don't necessarily end in a contracted way.
Thank you very much. Like, this
Yeah.
really moved me a little bit also.
Oh, I'm glad. Yeah, thank you for the question. Yeah. Any other questions or reflections? Ah, Patrice, feel invited.
Yeah, hi. Thank you so much. That was really lovely. I have a question that kind of follows on Kira's. And as you were alluding to early on, We're in a very difficult time here in the world and in the United States in particular. And so, how do we practice this with people that really are not, in my view, deserving of it? Our leaders, so to speak. What suggestions do you have for dealing with our current situation?
Yeah, I'm like, my honest answer would be actually, I'm like, I can actually answer how to work potentially with leaders. But what I'll offer before then is because offer it to everyone else. There are so many other beings in this world that we can open our hearts to, that can receive it, that can actually allow our hearts to grow and soften and open in ways, actually will cultivate our capacity to be with more and more difficult people. So I would say certainly don't start there, and allow the heart to grow, to feel kind of this benevolence to every other being. And then, right? So like when the heart is actually feeling this, yeah, this capacity and this like willingness and even desire to include the more challenging folks that are not necessarily in our, personal lives, but potentially, right, political figures. I guess there are a few things that come to mind. There's I mean, it's a similar possibility of like recognizing the humanity in them. Rather, you could see them as a child, for example. You could see aspects of their past where they were, not doing as harmful things, for example. Be like, oh, is there a heart in you that still, can hear this kind of well wish, that won't actually reject it, for example. I can imagine, if I'm sending well wishes to a particular person and they knew about it, they'd be like, oh, don't need that. But oh, is there a heart that can hear, be soft enough to know these well wishes, right? Something like that. And it's a long practice. It's a long, it's like, oh, can I open my heart? Again, the answer might be no. And this isn't a practice that we want to force in any way. It's an opportunity for us to cultivate our hearts. We're not directly changing their heart in the process. We're kind of forming and cultivating our own. And so that's why I kind of started with do it for everyone else and let the hardest beings be last, because if the hardest beings are last, our hearts are so much vastly wider. It might the love that's kind of flowing forth might just envelop them, because there's a recognition at a certain point that they're lost. And I do wish that they find their way, that they do feel love, real kindness, right? That they could really be at ease. And there might be a time where the heart really feels that. And if it doesn't, that's okay too. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I have to offer. Yeah. Thanks for the
Thank you.
curiosity. Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Cami mentioned that she would like to come on, he or she or they. So, Cami, if you want to unmute yourself, you are welcome to come on screen and ask your question.
Mute
Oh,
myself.
just there you are.
Oh,
We can see you. Hi.
I'm hi. This is a mother-daughter one, an adult daughter. I think we always had a bit of a rocky relationship, but then my daughter was married and had kids, and her husband died, and then she got involved with a narcissist abuser. I had no idea how a person can change a person that's, reasonably kind. I was going to say normal, but I don't think there's any normality in this one. But, we had our ups and downs, but nothing very bad. After that, or at the beginning of that, she became very hard to her four sons and to me. We were all, to her, we were all, I can't think of the word, controlling her. We were all trying to help her, actually. And this has been over, it ended in a very dramatic way. And I am now wanting a real relationship with my daughter because I was a single mum and I wasn't always the best mum because it's impossible when you're a single mum without masses of money and help and so on. So it's slowly getting better. It seems to be it's mostly sending text messages and pictures and things. But I have this thing, I'm 85 now, and gosh, I could disappear anytime. I want to write a letter. But somebody at one point said, no, no, don't write a letter. Letters can be misunderstood, but I think, you know, it's great to send meta and do all those things. But if she's not wanting to, I don't know exactly where she's at. That's too hard. I think something stronger is in words. So I just wanted your take on that about sending a letter. About wanting to have a relationship because there's not much time for me. Certainly, I mean, I've got things wrong with me and I'm not going to live forever. And it just seems she doesn't live that near me. And I was going to visit her, but then a health thing came up and I don't want to be where she lives if anything goes wrong. So sorry to give you so many details, but I want a relationship with her now. At this stage, she's 56 and I'm 85.
Right. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's, I mean, it is really tender. And what comes up for me is you know your heart and what wants to be expressed. And there's something about actually following that intuition, following that knowing of what wants to be expressed, what needs to be expressed, and putting that to paper. And you know your daughter, and in a particular way, you don't know how she'll receive it, but there's something, there's a gift you're maybe offering yourself in writing this letter and sending this letter and having her have it, receive it in whatever way, knowing that you can't control the outcome. And so there's, I guess, a curiosity in me around what does it feel like to write the letter, you know, than to contemplate sending the letter. Maybe writing the letter is enough. Maybe it's like, no, I really want to send the letter. And then you send it. And then you let go of what outcome will be, but you've expressed your heart. Yeah. How does that sound as a process?
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I think it's right. It's time.
Yeah.
And it was a very gentle meditation. I was not feeling well yesterday, and so I was, you know, quite by chance, I was around at this time that I could do it. And I thought, oh, that's a piece of magic. It was what I needed. You know, when we're talking about how awful the world is, and I'm really experiencing this, I'm not in the States, I'm in Canada, but we're near enough to get it. Could be the 51st state. No, I'm joking. That won't happen, I hope. You know, sometimes I really feel full of despair. But because I wasn't well last night, I took a pill that kind of calmed me down. And today it feels kind of like it's more flowy. And then fitted in with you very well because I'm not going out to do all these things that I meant to do had I been well.
Well, I'm so glad that this day has been one of ease. Yeah, in the midst of health changes and the chaos of the social political landscape.
So I see this as small miracles.
They're good to appreciate and notice and name. Yeah.
Lovely to meet you.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, Peace. It's nice to see you. It's Kate.
Hi.
I think during your talk, one thing that I was thinking about was often in the context of a lot of the division and injustice, is that often before I my inclination is like to do something, to take action. And more recently, I feel like I don't know what to do because I don't know that it's going to have that it will that can, that it can have an effect. And it's very upsetting. So that's just one thing. But the other part is, I think I wasn't exactly sure when you were talking about the renunciation of comfort, what that meant exactly, like emotional or physical comfort. And so I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, and it can look many different ways. And maybe I'll speak to the first piece of your reflection is, yeah, it can, I don't know if this is too much noise background, but it can often be hard to know or have an idea, a sense of what we can do in a way that has impact. And it can be quite overwhelming. I definitely know the feeling. And one of the things I turn toward that's been supportive for me is acting more locally when kind of the vastness of, you know, whatever it might be seems too large. It's like, oh, I live in New York. There are so many children that could be supported in this city. So many people that are unhoused. There are so many things I can do locally, which are endemic issues that aren't necessarily kind of getting a conversation on the national scale that really do need attention and are kind of within my own locus of, you know, kind of having a better idea of where I can turn and have some impact. So I'll just offer that as a possibility. Yeah, when the larger kind of national and international issues seem impossible, perhaps, to engage with. And then I was forgetting the second part, but I remember around, yeah, renouncing comfort. And that's kind of like this invitation to see where the edges are of, it could be emotional, it could be physical, it's right, it's like I'll use myself as an example. Am I not kind of, you know, talking about, let's say in the workplace, if we're talking local, let's just bring it even more in our lives, am I not naming something in the workplace because it makes me uncomfortable? That, you know, is this like, you know, something that I kind of have some ethical clarity around, like feel that needs to be named? Am I not doing it because it's uncomfortable? Is that the only reason? And, you know, perhaps there are like risks and things, other things in your life that you want to take into account. But if I find this habit, if I ask myself this question in different circumstances, again and again, I might see for myself, it's like, oh, I'm really avoiding actually using my voice because of discomfort alone. There's always some risk in speaking up. But I have discerned for myself that there had been a habit of actually not saying what needed to be said, according to my view, and because of this kind of wanting to stay in a particular comfort zone, right? So it's like stretching in the comfort zone emotionally for me. So it might be something like that. Might be like, I want to do something, you know, locally. But I kind of want to go check out this group, but I feel like kind of socially anxious about it. It's like, no, Peace, you can do it. You can do it. You can go. You can be uncomfortable. It's okay. It's okay to be uncomfortable. You'll probably like find some like-minded people and there's no harm in that. Or it might be a little overwhelming, and that's okay too. I don't have to actually extend myself other than maybe going there, perhaps, right? I can give myself a lot of permission around, it's like, oh, be uncomfortable, see what it's like, see if I can stay, something like that. And it might be it, like an example of maybe something physical is really just like doing without. Do I really need a new winter coat this season? You know, it's fall. It's like, ooh, the air is cool. Maybe I don't need to get a new scarf, don't need another coat. There's something about environmental, you know, kind of consciousness, you know, in that and in perhaps many other layers of that. But something like that. So that could be kind of like a physical, like just doing without. Does that kind of touch on the elements of that question around comfort?
Yeah, it's very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So we have time maybe for one more reflection or question. Yeah, how can you deal with this written question? How can we deal with fear that comes out about potential persecution for making a particular decision, right? Purchasing a book in this example, could there be fallout? And how to really work with that fear? Notice maybe starting by how it feels in the body, breathing with that, knowing the sensation. There's a way in which we can get familiar with the body sensations as sensations and recognize them as when they're present throughout the day, right? Like one example that maybe is referenced often is kind of nervousness, anxiety, or excitement. They can often feel quite similar in the body, and it's good to actually know that, because then it gives us an invitation to look to the mind. How are we perceiving this or putting it in a category that influences how we're actually with this bodily sensation? Because it will, so you can start with the body, getting to know the sensations, what's alive here. Maybe there's kind of an invitation of slowing the breathing, of softening any tension that's excessive, allowing the body to consciously be invited to be more at ease, you know, if it feels quite activated in that way. Another way you might explore is by maybe not listing out, you know, tens and, you know, 20 or 30 thoughts, but like really being curious about the thoughts that come with that fear. And you can ask if they're true, ask if, you know, ask if the mind is just kind of creating an exaggerated way that, you know, what is it called? You know, kind of catastrophizing, right? And so these are kind of doorways into being with that fear, because you don't need to necessarily get rid of it, because it might show up in many other circumstances. And this is just one way that it's showing up right now. So can you be with it? And if we can be with the fear, get to know the fear, we can recognize whether or not, maybe easily, sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's actually less clear on if we want to move forward with a particular action, in this case, purchasing the book. So I'll just offer that in these last few moments that we have, just as a start to that exploration, which is an important one, because fear actually directs a lot of our thoughts, a lot of our decisions in life. And so it's a good kind of feeling, emotion to explore in a conscious way. And so in recognizing the time and just, yeah, wanting to say thank you.